Thank you for coming. My name is Ryan Fuller. I am general manager in the Office 365 engineering group, responsible for workplace analytics, which we'll hear about today, as well as my analytics, which you may have seen over the course of the week. Prior to joining Microsoft, I joined about a year ago through acquisition. I was a CEO and founder of a company called Volumetrics that Microsoft acquired that specialized in exactly this category of organizational analytics. I will be joined a little bit later by Peter Mabey, who's a group program manager on our team, and he'll do some demos to give you a sense of how this stuff works. But what we're going to talk to you about is how you can use workplace analytics to help your entire organization focus on what matters most. How many people have never heard us talk about workplace analytics before? It's a lot of people. So it's a fairly new thing in the world. So we're going to introduce you to it at a very high level. However, we've been doing it for quite a while. I'll take you through the timeline. So we have quite a number of success stories that we can walk you through. This isn't just a conceptual thing that we're going to do in the future. It's going to continue to get better in the future, but we've been doing it for a while. So we'll show you where it's been successful and how. And then we'll show you what it looks like as a demo and then tell you how you can get at it. Before we do that, I'm going to pose a question that seems perhaps like a mundane question, but it's a pretty important one in organizations, which is, what if you knew how your people and teams actually work? A lot of people would talk about how you could manage, quote, manage by walking around, right? Like most managers, organizations weren't quite as big, weren't quite as complex. You'd kind of walk the halls and get a sense of who's working on what. What are the things that are on track? What's not on track? Where, as a manager, should I maybe ask a few more questions and get involved? You could kind of have you could have a finger on the pulse of the business. That's changed. Over the last several decades, through technology advancements, through the ability to do asynchronous communication, web conferencing, for tools like spreadsheets that allow particularly knowledge workers to just accomplish more work in any given day than they ever did before, there is just a lot more that gets done all the time. Simultaneously, companies have become more global. They've started to work 24/7. The level of complexity has just skyrocketed. So now, in most large companies, you might have hundreds or thousands or tens of thousands of employees working all around the world, and it's almost impossible to have any idea what's going on. So even if you assume, as we do, that everyone has the best intentions and is doing their best work on the things that they believe they should be working on, the odds of that work happening in a well-aligned fashion are very low, right? Like everybody has their local set of context and their local set of priorities that may or may not coordinate well with the rest of the broader organization. So this is a huge challenge. And the question, again, back to the question on the slide is, what if you did know? What if you as an organization, you as a leader in an organization, could know what was actually happening on a daily basis? What might you learn? Quite a few things. So I'll give you some examples. And these are case studies from companies we've worked with. I'll just give you the soundbite examples now. We'll do a few in more depth a bit later. But you might learn something like common knowledge is completely wrong in your organization. So this is a company we worked with using workplace analytics that believed, you know, they worked very heavily with channel partners that much of their revenue came through, resellers, system integrators, stuff like that. And they wanted to evaluate whether or not they were engaging and managing those relationships with partners as effectively as possible. They came to us and said, here's a list of the 700 employees that manage our channel relationships. Tell us if we're right, if those are the right people on the list, and tell us, you know, if there's any opportunities to make it better. We did some analysis, which I'll tell you about later. Turned out there were actually 7,000 people in this company that managed channel partner relationships on a weekly basis. So management was wrong by an order of magnitude on how many people in their organization actually do this thing. So this common knowledge was completely wrong and major implications for what decisions they might make based on that kind of insight. Another thing you might learn, you might learn when you should intervene, well before a bad outcome occurs. So another company we've worked with, we've applied these sorts of analytics to model employee attrition. And we can, in some cases, predict attrition quite accurately up to 50 weeks in advance of when it happens. So that's a cool example because very few people decide to quit 50 weeks in advance of when they quit. But maybe they just kind of aren't as engaged as they used to be. They're not kind of enjoying their job anymore. Something's changed. If you know that far in advance, you can probably change that outcome if you choose to. Another thing you might learn how to take 10,000 hours back. If you went to any of the My Analytics sessions or came to our booth, we do a lot of stuff around personal and team dashboarding to help people understand where their time goes in meetings and email and how to free up time. You can also do this at an organizational level where, what if you could reduce the time in meetings across 10,000 employees? You can easily, often quite easily, find opportunities to take out some low-value time and free up much more time for work for your employees. And 10,000 hours is just really just the beginning. Last quick one here. You might learn what success looks like. I'll go through an in-depth case study on this as well. This is a really cool one. Most companies generally know who their top performers are across different roles. And obviously, there's a lot of money and effort in trying to make more top performers or trying to help everybody else be as good as the top performers. It's really hard. It's really hard to understand what it is that they actually do differently than everyone else. And if you ask them, mostly they say, I don't know, I just do my job. What is everyone else doing? It's hard to tell. So we can apply these analytics to find behavioral thumbprints of what do top performers actually do differently than everybody else, role by role, within your company. So you can once you know that, I'll go through the case study, once you know that, you can provide that information out to all your employees and really empower them to be successful and learn from the best across their colleagues. So all this kind of stuff that you can do with workplace analytics, really, if you have the right data, is kind of the theme. So let me back up a second and say how we got here. Volumetrics was founded back in 2011, so about 5 years ago now. It was coming out of a lot of work I previously did at Bain as a management consultant, working with a lot of big companies to solve many of those kinds of problems where senior executives would say, hey, we don't know why we can't get enough sales productivity, or our company moves too slowly and it's too bureaucratic and we can't make decisions fast enough, or our employees are disengaged, you name it. And they didn't know what to do about it, so they would often go spend a lot of money on consultants, really in an attempt to just better understand how they operate, right? The consultants would go and survey a bunch of people, interview a bunch of people, try to figure out what's actually happening on a daily basis, which is I don't know if any of you have ever been part of one of those projects, they're horrible on all sides. And they yield bad data, and then bad decisions are made on that bad data that lead to often to reorganizations that cause more problems, and then that happens again in a year, and then these companies get in this like never-ending cycle of reorg. So we had said there's got to be a better way to do this, and we also said there is a data set sitting inside every company that, if you looked at it in the right way, could inform what's happening across everyone in the business on a near real-time basis. And that data set is email, calendar, the tools that people use every day just to do their job. So we started in 2011. We were acquired about a year ago, about 4.5 years in. We worked pretty much exclusively with very large companies, Fortune 500 type companies. But now as part of Microsoft, where obviously, when we started the business, Office 365 was just barely getting started. Didn't really exist. Everybody more or less had on-prem email, and the cloud was sort of getting there, but wasn't really there yet. So Volumetrics, we had to do this sort of company by company, where we would often install on-premises and pull their data out of Exchange, and then do all kind of analytics in their data center. And we couldn't take advantage of various cloud opportunities. Microsoft, within Office 365, just has an amazingly rich data set already, and the opportunity to be able to do many of these analytics in place and just provide them out directly to you. So it's a fantastic opportunity to take this to a much bigger scale. But so that was about a year ago we've been at this, and Microsoft is pouring quite a lot of investment into it. We have a few products. I mentioned My Analytics. This is a product that launched in December of last year. It is, think of it like the Fitbit for work, right? Where you get a personal dashboard every week that says, how much time did you spend in meetings last week? How much time did you spend in meetings and email after your normal work hours? Who are your biggest collaborators that you spend the most time with? All kinds of different insights about how you spend your time at work and allow you to set goals against those. So that's a product that's been out for a little less than a year. It's part of E5. It's also available as an add-on to E3 or E1. We announced yesterday that My Analytics will be adding team features in the coming months, where you'll not only be able to manage kind of your own time, but you'll be able to understand how you're spending your time in relation to various groups and teams that are important to you. You know, how much time am I spending with each of the customer teams that matter to me, or my project team, et cetera. So that's coming soon. And then the other side of the spectrum really is workplace analytics, which is the focus of this conversation. But if you think of, I often think about it, if My Analytics and team analytics is sort of a bottoms up, is just let's democratize the data and put it in the hands of everyone so they can make better choices. Workplace analytics is a little bit more of a, you know, let's look at all the data across the organization and apply some machine learning, some very sophisticated algorithms to try to identify macro patterns that could drive better organizational success that we could then share with all the employees to help everybody be more effective. But that's the spectrum of things that we do. And it really comes back to the Office graph. Like I alluded to this, I didn't realize how big Office 365 had become a year ago when we started talking to Microsoft. And I think many of you already know it, but it is just remarkable how many companies are using it, how fast it's growing every day. The amount of data in there is unbelievable. And in many ways, and I don't know the latest figure, hundreds of petabytes of data, right? If you think about it, you know, one way to think about that is the mundane way of, well, yeah, it has to be because people need to get at their documents and it needs to be able to pass emails back and forth, et cetera. A different way to look at it, and the way I look at it, is it's effectively the largest database that humanity has ever created about how people spend their time at work, right? It's just an amazing, amazing data set to be able to play with. We used to talk about the email and calendar data in particular. It's such a fascinating data set, and I'll talk more about that. But the only publicly available data set for email and calendar, I think probably still today, is Enron data that was made public as part of the discovery process in their trial back in 2004 or whenever it was. It was like 200 mailboxes of senior executive data for 3 months. So not very, relatively small data set. There are over 26,000 scholarly papers published analyzing that data set and coming up with tremendous amounts of insights gleaned from the interaction patterns across those only 200 people. So you think about the tens of millions of users in Office 365 and how that's growing, and the hundreds or thousands within your own company that are using this and what you might be able to learn from it. It's pretty remarkable. And this is what it is. It's the keys to unlock productivity. I think productivity is not a very well understood thing. It's a term that's thrown around all the time. But particularly for knowledge workers, where work is not about just completing the same tasks faster. It's about being innovative. It's about working with people in different parts of the company. It's about coming up with the best ideas. It's about reacting quickly to market conditions that are changing. It's hard to measure. It's very poorly instrumented today, but it's all, you know, it's in this data set, right? I believe we can find it. We can do things like find out what is it that our best teams are doing differently, consistently. We can figure out what is it that we do that makes our customers happy by saying, well, we can figure out who our happiest customers are. But often we don't know what exactly we did that made them that way or not. This can help us find that. And we can say, are we set up for success? You know, the reality is organizational structures are still based on 100-year-old manufacturing plant, like assembly line, you know, boxes and lines and things like that. It was originally for military, like logistics is how the org chart came to be. That is not how work gets done in knowledge worker organizations. Very often, and I'm sure you all experience this in your daily lives, but the analysis will show us that often the best, most effective people in companies are effective because they found ways around the formal org structure and they found ways around the processes and the bureaucracy that often, you know, they play an important role in a company, but they're not often in support of the kind of work that the company wants to accomplish. So this is stuff that can help unravel all of that complexity and ultimately make your organization much, much more productive. So let me take a step back, say, how does it work? So we talk about Office 365 data. You think about what's in there, you know, emails, calendar appointments, documents, Skype calls, Yammer, there's so much richness in there. Today, we use primarily email and calendar data. We will expand beyond that in the not too distant future, but email and calendar is interesting because we've done this now across many, many companies. You can account for, on average, 20 hours a week of each employee's time just through email and calendar, because that's how much time people spend either in meetings or sending email. For a manager or a senior executive, this number goes up to between 30 and 60 hours a week. So you get a very strong signal of where time is going. And when you think about what's in an email or what's in a meeting, you have, you know, a person A sent an email to person B. So then I can say, well, I can estimate that, you know, maybe that took 5 minutes to send. So person A spent 5 minutes with person B. That's interesting. When I maybe merge in some HR data from the outside and I know that person A was in marketing and person B was in finance, now I can say that marketing, you know, spent 5 minutes with finance. When I layer in additional data, you know, maybe it's a couple of meetings that marketing and finance had with several people and say, you know, marketing spent a collective 100 hours with finance last month. And then I can maybe layer in some cost estimates of people's time and I can start to say things like marketing spent about $10,000 of time with finance. And you can start to make this pretty interesting in ways where, you know, people cliche will say time is money, but most organizations don't really treat it that way. You can start, when you start to think about it a little bit differently and think about time as an investment, this will help you tally that up. But you can have, you know, time between groups. You can also begin to look at things like topics and projects. You might say, yeah, they spent, you know, 10,000 hours with finance and only 2,000 of that was on our most important project that we're trying to drive with them. And then you make a strategic choice. Is that the right allocation of investment or not? Also, of course, people email and meet with tons of people outside their company, customers, partners, vendors, suppliers. So you can start to say, well, gosh, here are the 100 customers that we spent the most time with last quarter. And here's exactly how many employees interacted with them. Here's exactly how much time was spent. Is that what we wanted to do? Does that match our list of most important customers, or are we actually spending most of our time with customers that are just asking us, you know, to do the urgent thing, and we're doing that rather than focusing on what's important? So you just think, even just between email and meetings, there's a lot you can do to develop how time is spent across the whole organization, and also what does the whole social graph look like, inside and outside a company. As I said, we'll add more signals to this over time with documents and Skype and all these things, but already this is incredibly rich data set. So what do we do with that? I mean, it's not that useful to say how many emails did person A send to person B, but we take all of that, all of those raw signals, and we process them into a set of KPIs. We often refer to them as behavioral KPIs. There's over 100 of them, and we often make new ones based on specific customer needs. But think about things like, you want to go solve a problem around waste, right? Back to the, I'm a big company, and we move too slowly, and everybody kind of says they spend way too much time in really big meetings that aren't worth their time. We can start to calculate things like that. How much time is spent in meetings by team? How much time of the time that is spent in meetings, what percentage of it are people just sending emails during those meetings the whole time, right? Or canceling last minute? Or what business processes can we identify based on a series of meetings that don't seem to be particularly high value based on the behavioral patterns occurring within them? That can be very valuable. I'll talk about a case study there. Stress. How much time are employees, is each team spending on nights and weekends in meetings? We get a lot of, particularly for global companies, you often don't know which teams were bearing the brunt of all the midnight calls with people from across the world until those teams tell you that they've had it and they're gonna quit now, right? But if you could have kind of an indicator of, gosh, I didn't realize that there's some hot zones across the company where people are really under stress, maybe you can intervene and you can improve it. Complexity. Where are there teams that are being pulled in 50 different directions? Where are there silos across the organization? Where is there redundant work being done? Where are there shadow IT organizations that are happening in other parts of the business that are just making everything cost more for us and making everything harder? Sales, we do a lot with sales. I'll talk to a case study there, but again, you can learn kind of everything about how you engage with your customers. Time with customers, number of people you interact with at each customer, et cetera. Sentiment, using some natural language processing, we can run the text of a subject line. We typically stay away from body content of emails for privacy reasons, and I'll talk more about that, but even just subject lines present a fairly reasonable sentiment signal to understand where are there positive and negative sentiment across the business. You can use this to also correlate that against employee engagement surveys and things to understand what's driving positive sentiment, or what behaviors drive it. Engagement ties into this. A lot of times we talk a lot about management quality, right? Everybody says people leave managers, not companies. It's nice to say in general, but what's true in your company, right? Do your managers invest in their people? We have KPIs like how much time do managers spend in one-on-ones with their employees? How much time do skip-level leaders actually interact with people down the chain? You can take all those things and say, well, now we know what's happening across the business, and then you can make either a value judgment about what do you want to be happening. Say, we believe our managers should spend at least a half hour in one-on-ones each week with their team. Let's make sure that's happening. Or you can say, now we know what's happening, now let's see what's good or bad for us and take something like employee engagement data or historical attrition data and see, you know, build the model and say, well, these are the behaviors that drive good outcomes for us and these are the ones that don't. Okay, so a lot of different stuff you can do there. As you can imagine, if you have a data set that sort of says in aggregate how is time being spent across the business, there are hundreds of different business problems you could solve, which is exciting. The three that we have spent the most time on over the last several years are these. So organizational simplification is that, hey, we're a big company, we want to be able to be more agile or lean, we have some transformation program going on, et cetera. Sales productivity, we want to get more out of our sellers, we want to have better outcomes with our customers, how do we do it? And employee engagement, how do we make our employees happier? How do we make this an attractive place for them to come and work? These are really three of 100, and that's one of the most exciting parts of this. I'll talk about how we typically work with companies, but we're gonna build a few of these that will be great solutions to target these, but we believe that ultimately we will have an ecosystem of partners that will build 100 more of them, right? That might be, as you'd imagine, a merger integration solution, you could imagine a supply chain optimization, a vendor management application. I mean, there's so many of these once you have this data available. And so that's where we're headed. So taking a step back, again, I know this feels very conceptual. I think it'll get more real as I go into some of the case studies and then Peter shows it to you. But it's a three-step process typically, right? So very few companies have ever had access to this data before. So step one is visibility, is let's get the data out. Got a bunch of different visualizations that help people understand what it looks like, what it's telling you. I often think about this as a health and fitness analog. This is almost like an MRI for your company. Like you get this readout that's like, here's oftentimes a billion things that you didn't know about the company, but it's kind of hard to interpret. So step two is this best practices, where often a team of analysts, either on our side or on within your company or with one of our partners that is expert in this, help interpret that MRI readout and apply a set of benchmarks and best practices from other companies, as well as perform advanced data science to identify the best practices within your company and kind of tell you what it says, or work with you to figure out what it says. And then productivity is the last phase. So if once you figure out of the thousands and thousands of new metrics and KPIs you could care about, here are the four that seem to be the most valuable and most actionable for your organization at this time. We typically work with customers to put those into some sort of Power BI dashboard or other mechanism so that they can get into an ongoing cadence of making sure that data is in front of the right people at the right frequency. So that is, and then it kind of starts again. However often, you know, you want to do a broader diagnostic and then tackle different business problems. Let me tell you some of those business problems so it gets a little bit more real. So I talked about this, what does success look like? This is something we do quite a lot of. And it's just kind of it's like kind of a no-brainer in many ways. But we take in a B2B sales organization, my clicker has, there it goes. We will take all that behavioral data that I talked about. We'll merge it with HR data so we know org chart kind of who's who in the organization at a role level. And CRM data so we can take emails to external recipients and map them to actual customer accounts. And then we also pulled in quota attainment data for the sellers. So we could say, who are the top performing sellers, medium performing sellers, and low performing sellers. It's a great thing. There's a lot we could talk about around privacy on this, but just to assure you, it's not even that interesting to look at this at an individual level. That's not the point of this. The point is to find macro patterns across the company. Like I want three groups of sellers, high, medium, low, right? And there could be 100 people, 1,000 people in each one of those groups, just so I get the footprint, right? So then I can start to say, of my highs, how do they look different than everybody else? And this is some disguised data from an actual customer, but just to highlight some of how this plays out, in this particular example, the first KPI, the top performer spent 43% more time with customers. So that means directly emailing or meeting with somebody that was at a customer account. So 43% more time. This is pretty intuitive. Most sales leaders would say, yeah, obviously. Top sellers just sell more. That's what I'm telling everybody. They should stop spending all their time internally. They should get out there, spend more time with customers. Fine. The next two are less intuitive. And they kind of go together. What we learned for this particular company is they spent more time with customers in general, but they actually spent that time with fewer accounts. So they invested all of that time that they had in only 11 accounts over the course of a quarter, whereas the sort of average and low performers spent with 19 accounts. Right. So that meant they got quite a lot more time per account, and that allowed them to build 200% more relationships at the account. So they effectively interacted on a regular basis with six people at each one of their accounts versus two, which the average performers did. So this suggests that this is an area where depth was a more effective approach versus breadth. I think a neat thing about this is we are not uncovering truisms that are globally true about how different parts of, how to do sales. We have seen the exact opposite pattern in other companies where breadth is better. It's the sales reps that somehow manage to touch 100 accounts in any given week, even though they only sent one email, that do the best. So this is very targeted to your organization. And sometimes it's even different by product line, by geography, et cetera. But this gets down to precisely not some outside like perspective on how to do sales well, but exactly what's working best inside your organization so that you can then share this out. This particular insight was not intuitive to the company we were working with or the sales leadership team that we were working with. As they thought about it, it made sense to them, but it was not at all part of how they were running the business. And it had real implications. They started to make real changes into how they structured people's territories, how they coached their sales reps, how they did a lot of things. I'll talk to the results. The last thing, size of internal networks, if there's anything that we're finding that is perhaps a truism globally, it is that top performers in pretty much any role that we've ever looked at have much larger internal networks than everybody else. An internal network meaning how many people inside their own company that they interact with on a regular basis. So in this case, the top performers had 68 people that they maintained regular contact with versus 42 of everybody else. This is also very counterintuitive, particularly for sales leaders who think that you should be spending all your time outside the company selling, and they don't appreciate that to sell effectively, you also need to know all the right specialists, you need to know the right guys on the legal team that can get things pushed through contracting, you need to know the right executives that'll get on a plane and come meet with you and close a deal. I mean, there's so much value to having that internal network, and most companies don't invest behind this. They don't set up their people to have the right tools and the right programs to build these kind of networks and maintain them. Once you have this kind of data, and you can turn it into something like, hey, for every additional 10 relationships that our people get, it translates to another $1 million of revenue, you know, whatever the numbers turn out to be, suddenly you have a business case. And I think, I know, you know, most folks here at this conference are in IT organizations. All kinds of, you know, collaboration tools that you could invest in can help employees do this, but it's sometimes hard because it's often, particularly around building employee networks, kind of feels a little bit fluffy. But once you get down to those hard business case numbers, it can be like, well, yeah, obviously we should go spend $1 million because it's worth $100 million to us in new revenue. So this is an area where not only technology, but technology can really be more directly tied to business outcomes. So that's one example. This is not, that wasn't their data, but Symantec has been a longtime customer. Matt Weaver is a sales ops leader there. He was on stage with our Microsoft sales leader at a conference a few months ago, and he said this, over three quarters, by doing this type of analysis and rolling out the answers to employees so that they could know how to emulate the best, it drove an additional $237 million of revenue over three quarters. So this isn't like a science project that is just kind of incrementally interesting. I mean, this can drive huge results for companies. Okay, different example. Take back 10,000 hours, we talked about. This, a common thing that we do is benchmarking. So one way you might look at it, very simple to do, say how much time is spent in meetings per week by level, right? So here this chart, SVPs are spending about 30 hours a week in meetings, VPs 25, and so on down the line, down to individual contributors in the 5 to 10 hour a week range. You can start like that. You can start to see, are there any weird places where it looks different than it seems like it should. We can apply benchmarks from other companies and say, gosh, you know, your director and manager level seem to be really high relative to other companies. Maybe we should go dive deeper there. Or you can slice and dice this, and Peter will show you this in the demo a little bit. Let's maybe look at this by department. Let's look at this, maybe now cut this by what percentage of these meetings seem to be low engagement based on some heuristics we can pull into play. But a lot you can do here. I think a fun example that drives the point home is some work we did with a great partner of ours, Bain Consulting, who used this to get very targeted about a specific CEO-level staff meeting that happened every month. And this was published in Harvard Business Review a couple years ago. The results of this were they looked at that staff meeting. They looked at, I think it was like 12 executives in that staff meeting every month. That was 2 hours long. So you could say, okay, well, 2 hours times 12 people equals, you know, 24 hours. And we can then multiply that by the cost, you know, the rough comp estimates of those people. So you get to a dollar amount for what that meeting cost times 12 months. But also they were able to use the tool to then map out the prep meetings for that meeting. And then the prep meetings for those prep meetings and the prep meetings for those prep meetings. And by the time you added this all up, it turned out it was a $30 million meeting. And not that that's a bad thing, right? It could be totally worth it. But if you were gonna go spend $30 million in money at a company, there would be quite a lot of scrutiny on the business case and the ROI and making sure you're getting value out of that time. For things like a meeting, almost certainly it was just an administrative assistant that clicked send on something, and all these prep meetings that blossomed out from there. So companies are, it's a very hard thing to quantify. and it's a very hard thing to understand. Most people would say, yeah, sure, that meeting isn't that valuable to us, but I mean, whatever, it's just a couple hours, and what are we gonna do about it? But then when you say, hey, this is a $30 million cost, does it meet the bar for value? In this case, the answer was no, and so they changed it. And that freed up lots of time to get real work done across the company. It doesn't just, and it's not just getting work done. People that are tied up in these meetings that they find low value, that also has all kinds of negative impacts on morale, on the company's ability to make quick decisions, et cetera. So there's quite a lot you can unlock by digging into this stuff. So, and this is an example from that company. So now we can focus on innovation rather than meetings. So kind of value that you can provide. Last example, and I'll turn it over to Peter for demo. I talked about this one around the 700 people that they thought were the only ones managing channel relationships, whereas it was actually 7,000. Just a couple more words on that. They, when you tallied it all up, right, and we could look, there were, you know, tens of thousands of channel partners that they had. So 7,000 employees that spent at least 1 hour per week in a direct email or meeting with one or more of those channel partners. It added up to 2 million hours a year of time being spent engaging with those partners, which was around a $200 million time investment. And that doesn't even include the, you know, prep time and internal time and discussions that don't include the partner directly. So it's undercounting. But $200 million, again, then the next question is, well, is that good or bad? Is that, I mean, that's where a lot of our revenue came from. Maybe it should be higher. Maybe it should be lower. But then you can go into the next level with some advanced data science, and you can start to say, well, let's assign some value to each one of these partners. Let's look at how much revenue they produce for us. Let's look at maybe strategic value of them helping us enter new markets. Let's look at growth trajectory, et cetera. And let's try to understand, does it, when we invest more time in one of these relationships, does it actually turn into value or not? And the answer was mostly not for them. But sometimes it did. Like if you got very specific, you can get, this is stuff you can do at a high altitude or you can get very, very detailed with it. We got very, very detailed on this one. And we also did some natural language processing where we could parse out, you know, kind of by type of channel partner. Is it a reseller? Is it an integrator? Is it whatever? And are we talking about promotional opportunities? Are we talking about support stuff? Are we talking about new programs? Some categories did correlate with value creation, but many did not. So even by the end of this, even the people that were fairly skeptical of this approach concluded that at best, half of that time correlated with value, and the other half was, you know, best case scenario was neutral, but more likely was actually pretty value destroying because there were different pockets of teams across the company that were engaging with the exact same people at channel partners about conflicting topics, right? And the channel partners knew that, and they were annoyed by it, but the teams weren't coordinated inside the company. So 2 million hours a year, at least half of it value neutral to destroying, that's a million hours of time. That's 500 FTE equivalent that is not being used very well. And the answer to that is not, great, we can have 500 less FTEs. The answer is not only did they learn that, but they also, because of this analysis, got a very specific map by geography, by channel partner, by line of business, of what kinds of activities actually did correlate with value. So they could take a million hours of capacity that they have in their system and they could realign it with the things that have been historically, at least, proven to correlate with value. So this is the kind of thing that immediately is the COO and CEO after, I mean, no one took our word for it on this analysis, of course, like this went through several iterations, but once it was agreed upon, this immediately led to large-scale changes across the company. So huge value opportunity. And this is the quote, right? This is gonna change the way we operate our entire business. And that is really the gist of workplace analytics. It is in its infancy. I mean, even though we've been doing this for 5 years, really this isn't being done anywhere else. But as this field advances, I do believe it will change the way that businesses operate in a fundamental way. So quick recap, and I'll turn it over to Peter here. This is what it is. It's an ability to gain completely unprecedented insight into how your organization works, particularly around time and the social network. Lets you get at some very complex business challenges that are usually well outside the realm of technology tools' ability to address. Lets you identify and model best practices and even predict business outcomes that are coming. More tactically, what it is a set of dashboards, data visualization, ability to explore data, a set of very unique KPIs that are new, and we call it wide business application. The reason for that is because it can be applied to so many different parts of the business. So it can truly be a platform that you have teams of analysts across the company using for all kinds of different purposes. To that, I'm going to invite Peter up to show you something a little bit more tangible here. And we'll come back up and take some questions at the end.
Morning, everyone. Thanks for having me. Just be a split second to set up. Okay. Great. Thank you for coming. It's great to see so many people here. I have a couple questions I wanted to ask the audience. If you could raise your hand if you're answering yes to my question. The first question is whether you've ever been asked by business leaders or execs in your company to answer these kinds of questions or other kinds of questions like how many emails are people sending or how many meetings are we having or how's Department A collaborating with Department B or any of those kind of questions. Anyone else here ever been asked to answer those kind of questions? So a third, maybe half the audience. Okay, that's pretty neat. How many of you ever been asked to support a big corporate initiative to try and wring more value out of data that you already have? You ever been asked to participate in those kind of initiatives? About a third of the people? Okay. Did anyone here ever try and hack Exchange to make that happen? Either of those two things. Anyone ever try and hack Exchange? How'd it go? Who else has tried it? How'd it go? Okay, yeah, you built the whole business out of that. Anyone else ever try and hack Exchange to answer these questions? Boy, only one guy. We should talk afterwards. I'm curious to hear more about that. Well, our idea is that you don't have to be that guy anymore. You don't have to try and hack Exchange. We're going to kind of pre-hack Exchange for you and make it possible for you to offer to analysts in your company or partners access to this data in a way that'll help them answer these kind of business questions. So the kind of analysts I'm thinking of are the sales operations guys, the HR guys, the digital transformation guys, those kinds of pools of analysts. How many people, but just by raising your hand, how many people have analysts like that in their organization somewhere? A third of the people, some half of the people, something like that? Okay. So we know that you've invested a lot of time in migrating to Office 365, and a lot of people in your business probably think Office 365 is a bit of a utility. We think a little bit differently about that. We kind of think Office 365 might be one of the most valuable data sets that you actually have. And we think of it as the digital breadcrumbs that have been left by all of your employees as they go about their day-to-day business of collaborating and communicating with each other. So I want to talk to you today about how you can realize the full potential of that data that's sitting in Office 365. So the first thing is analysts in your company will be able to get, oh, can't see? It went for me. Where's the clicker? Let's try that. We need the expert help here. Apologize for a slight delay. Oh, I had it on. That's user error. He quickly pointed that out. How's that? Awesome. Thank you. So the first thing is analysts in your company or analysts in a partner that your company selects will have access to the rich KPIs that Ryan described. They'll be able to put those KPIs in the context of other line of business data that you have in your company, principally HR data and CRM data, but you'll be able to join it with any kind of line of business data that you have. We'll talk more about that later. And third, while the ultimate goal is to make your analysts self-sufficient with this, Microsoft is going to be there to provide training, consulting, cookbooks for common use cases, and business consulting services, if that helps in your particular problem space. So how do we do that? Well, as Ryan talked about a little bit, the first thing is that we have all these rich signals in Office 365. We're starting with email and calendar. Of course, we have document signals. We know that Bob edited a document at 5 yesterday at the same time as Jane edited the document, et cetera. We have all that metadata, all those email logs. We take all of those email logs and we process them into a kind of data model where we build a model of people, meetings, and emails and other kinds of entities. We pre-process that in a way that makes it quite useful and does a lot of the heavy lifting so you don't have to hack Exchange. You get access to this data model. Then we have this technology, this app called Workplace Analytics. And the Workplace Analytics is a bunch of compute and storage and business rules that allow you to query that data model and transform it into the KPIs that Ryan talked about. And I'm going to show you a demo of how that works in a second. But so there, you got to imagine kind of we look at the underlying email logs and other transactions that are happening in Exchange. We pre-process those into a data model, which you can then query and transform into those KPIs. And we provide everything that you need to do that. All the storage, the compute, the business rules, everything will be provided by Microsoft. And we also provide a, of course, you know, privacy and data security are pretty important. You've invested a lot in getting compliant, and you know that Microsoft takes that very, very, very seriously. So two important things about this product. One, we will ensure that no one gets access to this information without an action from the admin, the Office 365 admin team in your company. So you'll be able to grant access to analysts, whether those analysts are in your company or in a partner company. Second, we'll provide you with the configuration you need to use the privacy and access controls that are appropriate to your business and to your locale. I mean, this is very complicated, as all of you know. If you're in Germany or France, the rules are different than the United States, et cetera. So we'll make sure that you have the knobs and dials that you need to comply with local laws and the culture of your company. Just quickly before I turn to the demo, just to kind of frame up the demo, how you'll see the flow of the demo. It's kind of a three-step process in this. The first, and we're taking the analyst perspective, so we're imagining that the Office 365 admin has given access permission to an analyst. We're thinking from the analyst's shoes. The first thing the analyst does is validate the data. They want to make sure that it's appropriate for the business needs, that it's fresh and up to date, et cetera, and I'll show you how they do that. The second thing is they query the data. There's a couple different paths to do that. There's kind of a highly customized query builder, which I'll show you. There's also a bunch of pre-canned queries and pre-canned visualizations and views, which I'll show you. Once the analyst has the data, they can use their favorite BI tools to do the analysis. We'd love it if they'd use Power BI. We love Power BI. We want the whole world to use Power BI. But we don't require that you use Power BI. We'll give you the underlying data, and your analysts can use whatever BI tools they commonly use. So let's have a look at how that goes. So, oops, let's make that a little smaller. Can you all see that? Okay. Can you see that okay? Yeah, good. So this is what I was describing earlier as the data validation phase. We call this the home page of the Workplace Analytics app. You kind of get a high-level view of the key data that's in your system. So if you look on the left, there's 25,000 employees whose data we're processing. They're collaborating with 125,000 people outside the company, partners, customers, et cetera. You get a little bit of data about, you know, the average email hours, the average meeting hours, just to kind of give you some context, make sure that kind of feels right to the analyst. In the middle, you get some trend lines on that data, kind of gives the data analyst some validation of whether this looks right. Depending on the industry, you know, you see dips and spikes at holidays, end of quarters, retail season, et cetera. So depending on the context in which the analyst is dealing with the data, this will give them some sense of whether it's right. On the right-hand side, what you see is kind of validation that the data is flowing correctly and that it's fresh. So here we're looking at O365 data, CRM data from the sales system, and what we call org data or HR data from the HR system. So the next thing the analyst does, they feel good, they feel like the data's flowing, the data's validated, it feels pretty good. Then we've, if you look down to the bottom left here, we have a spot we call views. So these views are what I was talking about a little earlier, that it kind of gives some canned ways of looking at the data for the analyst. And those canned ways might, in some cases, be sufficient enough to actually solve a complete business problem. In other cases, they're a good way for the analyst to get started and kind of narrow in on a particular problem space or a particular opportunity that they want to investigate. So I'll show you a couple of those. So clicking on the views, this is not necessarily the set we're going to ship with eventually, but we started with these five. This will grow over time. It might change by the time we ship, but we're going to package more and more of these over time. So the first one is what we call a week in the life, which is kind of a generic view of how your company is spending time. So if you look here, the first tile is time in meetings. So in this company, people are spending 17.5 hours in meetings, which is not unusual. There's been a spike in meeting activity recently. That might be due to some activity happening, quarter end or retail season. And then, remember I mentioned that we let you bring in HR data. So this is the first example, if you look down the left-hand side, of departmental level. So we tag in the underlying data model, we tag each individual with these attributes about which department they're from, what level they are, what their title is, whatever is appropriate to the circumstances in your business. So in this case, these are kind of department names. So you can have a look at the data for department. So that might give you some insights into areas that the analyst could drill into further. And I'll show you how they might drill into that further in a little bit, but this gives you a quick little start. This data here, time and email, is interesting. Ryan was talking about that earlier. So once again, in this company, they spend an average of 8.2 hours a week in emails. You can see the spike. You can see the team's averages. That might give you some areas where the analyst could start focusing. So a second example, going back to views, is what we call enterprise connectivity. So here what you're looking at is something a little more sophisticated. And remember Ryan described, he said, hey, I think he said sales is talking to marketing. So he said, hey, you know, first one guy in sales sends one email to marketing, that's interesting, but when you aggregate those all up and put a dollar value on it, then it gets really interesting. Well, you can think of this as an instantiation of a way to view that data across the whole enterprise. It's a bit of a heat map. So I think of it as one of those, you know, those old style road atlases where you have this list of cities down one side and the list of cities across the bottom, and you find the distance. This is the equivalent, but it tells you how engaged those two parts of the business are. So for example, here, this is sales or IT, or this is sales and engineering. So sales and engineering collaborated for 1,840 hours in this particular time period. So you can look at this, you can look at trend lines on this, and the analyst can start to focus in on some parts of the business that are particularly relevant. Maybe this might be enough to answer some simple problems. You know, you did a reorg. You know, is part A of the business collaborating successfully with part B of the business? Is a company you recently acquired that you brought into the business collaborating successfully with other parts of the business? So in some cases, this might be enough to answer a complete problem. In other cases, it might just be a start to a more complicated analysis. So let's imagine that we had an analyst who wanted to dig a little deeper into one of the problems that Ryan described, say the meeting collaboration. Could be anything, but let's pick the meeting collaboration. So the way they would do that is they want to generate the KPIs for a specific set of people under a specific set of circumstances. So we're going to build a query interface UX, query builder, that'll let you do that. And the way to think about this is it's just a very simple UX that generates uSQL, and then you're querying, we process the uSQL and give you the results. So I'm going to say that again because it's kind of an interesting, powerful idea. It's like you can query Office 365. That's the way you should think about that. You can write, you can't quite write, you can use this UX to write you SQL that queries this underlying data model and gives you access to the things that guy had to hack for. So instead of hacking, you can write you SQL and get everything you need to know for your entire business. Well, we think everything you need to know about how people are collaborating and communicating in your business. I think that's a pretty powerful transformational idea that we can do because we have scale and because we can bring the best of machine learning, and we understand the internal dynamics of the system in a way that lets us make that happen in a very accurate, very sophisticated way. So let's look at that query. So imagine you were going to do some sophisticated query. You click on the query builder. Let's call it Peter Ignite Query, blah, blah, blah. You can pick a date range. In a lot of these studies, long-term data set is pretty important. You're looking at executives want to look at long-term trends. That's pretty important to have a long data set. In other studies, it's a more select. We'll just select a random date here. In other studies, it's a more recent phenomenon that's interesting. So let's just quickly go through a simple example. So the filter enables you, using these attributes of people, to select the population that you're interested in for the study. So you could say HR, or I don't know, what else we got in here? Sales, marketing, operations, et cetera. You can say, hey, I'm interested in everyone in the company. I'm interested in a particular population. I'm interested in people 5'10" and higher. I'm interested in people whose tenure is less than 5 years. There could be, I have no idea. There could be many, many variations on that. Dimensions is the attributes that you want in the report. So in this case, that's simple. We'll just leave it as it is. That's the function, what region people are in, what level they're at, what role they play in sales. And attainment is kind of interesting. It goes back to this example that Ryan gave about whether people are successful salespeople or less successful salespeople. So we have extended the data model to include data from your company about the success of salespeople that is directly incorporated into the system. And then you can select the metrics, and that just gives you, remember Ryan mentioned all these KPIs, so these are those KPIs. So Ryan mentioned dozens and dozens of KPIs. You can select from among these KPIs, and at query time, at job runtime, we will generate those KPIs from the underlying data model. So I don't know, I've listed really simple ones here, mail sent, mail hours, but you saw the list from Ryan. There's quite sophisticated KPIs and quite meaningful KPIs that you could select from. So let's say I send mail sent, just as a simple example. Then you can get a little more sophisticated. Actually, let's say I selected meetings attended. And then you can actually customize a little bit that metric to select the particular attributes that you're interested in. So you might be interested in long meetings, short meetings, meetings with a lot of people in it, meetings with few people in it. So there might be various properties of those KPIs that you want to select from that is interesting for your study. So then normally you just click run and that query would run. I'm going to skip that and show you, if you go back to queries here, we have a pre-canned query, which we call wasted meeting hours, which is similar to the example that Ryan used. So let's imagine that instead of doing that customized query, I had started with this pre-canned query. So I have this pre-canned query called wasted meeting hours, which might have been created by Microsoft, delivered as part of the product, might have come from you guys, might have come from your analysts, might have come from a partner in the ecosystem. However, it's kind of pre-tuned and pre-organized to help solve a particular business problem. So we'll run that query. Okay. And so we provide a job framework. Those jobs will run. Some of them take some time. It is in a large company, like in Microsoft. We've done some of this with Microsoft now. Microsoft has 200,000 mailboxes. You run queries on 200,000 mailboxes for a year. That's a lot of compute. So some of those jobs can take many minutes. But like a cooking show, I've pre-baked the answer. So let's just skip to the outcome. You could, when that's done, you could download it. It'll download, and you can get the export, and then take it to your BI tools. But let's imagine we've done that, and we're going to our favorite BI tools, which, of course, in my case, is Power BI. So let's click on Power BI. So this is an example of a, let's actually unclick this. So this is an example of the kind of study that Ryan talked about, meeting inefficiency or efficiency. So in this case, this is a pre-canned Power BI report, which has been pre-built to be paired with that particular query. And this would be the kind of thing that an analyst could use to solve common meeting or analyze common meeting use and meeting pattern, meeting efficiency problems. So as Ryan said, you know, you might be interested in a particular department or a particular region. So you can slice and dice by a particular region and see that. You can look at, Ryan mentioned, the management level has a lot more meetings than the other levels, et cetera. So you can slice and dice by these HR attributes, by region. You can look at department, et cetera. Just to highlight some of the metrics, you know, the overall meetings for this organization are kind of what we think of as okay. 20 hours of meetings per employee, that's not unusual. 22 meetings per employee, 54 minutes per meeting, that's not unusual. The bars in the middle are kind of interesting. Just take a second to look at those two, because these are a couple of KPIs that are quite interesting about meetings. The one in the middle is called redundant meetings. And the idea of redundant meeting is that some people in the meeting are redundant. And that means that if you're in a meeting with your manager and your skip level manager, maybe you don't need to be there. Maybe others don't need to be there. But maybe someone doesn't need to be at that meeting. If there's multiple levels of management, it's not for sure. I mean, in some contexts it might be appropriate, but that's often an indicator of unhealthy meeting culture and something that an analyst could dig into to investigate further. Low engagement meetings are some mixed indicators that we pulled together to suggest that people might not be paying attention in that meeting. For example, they're multitasking in that meeting, or they frequently decline that meeting, or they are frequently double booked with that meeting. There's some ways of detecting people either not paying attention in that meeting is essentially the concept. The analyst can kind of look at this and say, hey, I'm kind of curious. Well, you know, what are these meetings? What departments are having these meetings? How many meetings are there? And you can query the underlying data model to get the actual list of meetings. And the analyst can start to actually investigate at a more granular level what's going on. So you can see this is kind of a pretty interesting, pretty powerful way to get at that underlying data, to represent that data, to query that data, and to analyze that data that could actually help people in your business solve some of these pretty powerful business problems. So we're super excited about this. We're making some pretty massive technology investments to make this possible. And we think it can really help transform your business, and is something that you can offer to your business as a new way of thinking about the asset that you've built in transitioning to Office 365. So Office 365 is not just a utility you're offering your business to process mails, it's actually a repository of knowledge and insight into how your employees are behaving and what they're doing that we think in many cases can actually transform significant parts of your business. So I'm going to stop there to make sure we leave adequate time for questions, because we have 11 minutes and 47 seconds left.
One more thing.
Yeah.
Are you close? Let's see. So you, hopefully at this point you're wondering, how do I get that? Let me see. So the last part, so this is, you can get this now. Not everybody can get this now, though. Basically, what we have, as I said, Volumetrics has been doing similar stuff for many years. We have what is called the Prime program. It is a paid early access program, is one way to think about it. So you can't, we're unfortunately not at a point with the technology yet from a scalability perspective that we can just say, yeah, go kick the tires on this today. But if you believe that your organization is ready for this and it fits with some priorities that you have, we would love to talk to you and figure out if now is the right time or when is the right time. We have in dozens of customers that we're working with right now deploying this and intend to grow it quite quickly over time. So if you think now the time is right, or you want to start talking about when the time might be right, we'd love to hear from you, daprime@service.microsoft.com, or you can hit up one of us. And that's it. We're happy to take some questions. Thank you. I'm sorry? It is right now in this early access program, it doesn't have to be. Well, when you say a cloud service, you mean it only works against data that's already in the cloud, or do you mean? We potentially could deploy it on-premise. We probably won't for much longer, if that answers your question. Historically, we did. As part of Microsoft, we're pushing very hard to have everything be self-contained in Office 365. How is who reacting? Trade unions. Yes, the question is, how is trade unions reacting to this? Are they nervous about how it could be used? I've spent a lot of time in the last 5 years talking to lawyers and works councils and things like that. It's a new type of analytics that's really very much in its infancy. We have performed it all over the world. It just takes some conversations to figure out, you know, as Peter described, the right settings from a privacy perspective and from a culture perspective. Very often, companies have ultimately decided that it is de-identified at a sufficient level that it's not a big deal, and works councils have concluded similarly. But it has to be done right, right? That is a very important thing, that this doesn't get used for the wrong purposes and that both compliance and privacy are handled appropriately. So that's a huge focus of both our technology strategy and the way that we engage. Does that answer your question? Are people nervous a little bit? Yes, because it could be, certainly. But we, again, as more and more, I used to say, if you said 10 years ago, how do you feel about a company like Google knowing where you are within 5 meters at any time because they're on your phone, you'd say, that's crazy, I don't want to do that. But then if you said, but what if it could help you get to where you're going with less traffic? Like, okay. So, I mean, if in the absence of really understanding the value you get from something, I think people get more nervous about what it, you know, the perceived invasiveness of it. So I think as this market matures and as there's more and more great case studies in which literally 100% of our successful, great customer outcomes are all about empowering employees and help them be more effective, I think that it gets easier as we go. But it's early days. Other questions? Okay, well, thanks again. Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. So I'll briefly summarize so people can hear. I think the question is kind of how when you get down to the next level in this example, helping do an IT project for a sales team, but then having to coordinate with other teams in the delivery of that, how can we detect that that's why you're coordinating with the other IT teams, and that should be basically counted as part of that sales technology project, right? It's hard, basically. Yeah, I mean, we continue to develop new and better advanced algorithms to be able to pair things together. And you could do more than you might think based on keywords in subject lines that people didn't intentionally tag or categorize. You can do that, and you can look at overlap of the people involved in different projects. Like if that's kind of the project that you're 100% working on, we can say, well, we know we can sort of tally up everybody you're talking to as part of that. If it's one of 10 projects you're working on, it gets a little harder. But this is, I think where this usually starts is at a fairly aggregate level, and then you start to go deeper as needed. And deeper as needed does not always mean just more queries. Sometimes that means pick up the phone or go and ask some questions, because this in some ways just gives you a starting place to go and hunt for where there's opportunities to get better. So eventually, some companies, as they go deeper into this, and you know, very often it starts very analytics-y, and then it turns into a pretty broad distribution of data to different employees that help them understand, like how do I be a better salesperson, for example. But as individuals across the organization start to get their own value out of the data, it's easier to solicit tagging and categories and things like that. And some companies do start to adopt those kind of things. So sometimes we get into this. There's certain types of things that this can calculate out of the box like really, really, really well. And there are certain things like your example where it's messier. It's harder to be precise. What I often say to people though is if you compare what this will tell you versus what you know today through most means that you could get. I mean, you might not get perfect precision with us, but mostly you have a few anecdotes without it. So it's at least a very strong starting point. That make sense? Yeah. Okay, well, thank you, everybody. Enjoy the rest of the conference.
Thanks.